You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. When prices are soaring, it's more important than ever to check in with your investments and make sure your money is working for you. Discuss strategies for tackling all of life's rising costs with a complimentary wealth checkup. Schedule yours today at planefe.com/hermoney or by calling 833-304-PLAN.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
I actually have time blocked off on my calendar, like once a month. It's an hour. Sometimes I don't even take the full hour, where I really tune into what's energizing me and what's draining me in my work, and how can I figure out a way to lean into the stuff that's energizing, and how can I let go of the stuff that's draining.
Hey everyone, I'm Jean Chatsky. Thanks so much for joining me today on Her Money. So let me ask you a question. How are you feeling specifically about your job or your career? Depending on what industry you're in, you may be concerned about layoffs or consolidation or a year that just isn't going to be as good as it was in the past. A recent survey from the folks at Bankrate revealed that 88% of workers who are worried about their job security are planning to take action within the next year. That includes everything from searching for a new job to asking for a raise to thinking about or considering relocation or even just quitting altogether. These workers are realizing that we're in uncertain times and are planning to make positive career changes on their own terms while they still can. The survey also found people are changing jobs more frequently than ever before. 55% of the workforce looked for a new job in 2023. That's up from 51% in 2022. We're going to dig into why that is. And I know that many of you have big goals, big career goals, big business goals that you are working to hit in 2024 and beyond. We are going to talk about how you do that as well. And I'm so excited to be doing it with Fran Hauser. You may remember Fran. She was on our show back in 2018. She is a leading career expert, a former Fortune 500 executive, author of the best-selling book, The Myth of the Nice Girl, as well as the companion workbook, Embrace the Work, Love Your Career, which has become the go-to curriculum for women's affinity groups nationwide. And before we jump into the episode, can I just say we love you guys. We love our Her Money podcast community. One of our listeners recently wrote, "Finance and investing can be daunting for us regular folks, but Jean boils complex concepts down to their essence and explains financial matters in ways you can understand." If you're a regular listener and you haven't left us a review, please take a second, write us a review on Apple Podcasts. I know it sounds silly, but these things really do make a difference, and you might hear yours on the next episode. And now let me welcome Fran Hauser back to the show. Hey, Fran.
Hi, Jean. It's so nice to see you.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice to see you too. It hasn't been since 2018. We saw each other, I think it was in DC, actually, at a conference. Do you remember that?
Yes. Was it? I think it was one of the conferences for women.
And it may not have been DC. It may have been a different city somewhere across the country, but I do remember sitting with you and signing books at the same time. So nice to see you.
So nice to see you. I can't believe it's been 6 years since 2018, though.
I know. Well, for my listeners who are newer or who aren't familiar with you, you've done so many different things. Tell us a little bit about your career path and bring us up to date since The Myth of the Nice Girl.
Yeah. Well, I've had a very long and varied career, that's for sure. You know, I spent many, many years in corporate. Jean, you and I were at Time Inc. together, where I ran digital for brands like People Magazine and InStyle, Entertainment Weekly. Such a fun job. And, you know, I was an executive at that company. I left corporate about 12 years ago and moved into startup investing. And I've now invested in over 35 female-founded companies, which has been really amazing. I've written 2 books, as you mentioned. And so now, like, this is what my professional life looks like. First of all, I always like to say I'm a multi-hyphenate. And I feel fortunate, actually, to be able to work on projects that really feed me and to work with people who I really love to work with. Where I'm spending most of my time right now is on my thought leadership platform, which is all around really helping women create careers that they love while staying true to themselves. And I do that through my books and through speaking and my digital content. And I also have a business called Bookbound, where I help aspiring authors get their books out into the world. So get them published and help them with their launch plans. So I've really kind of pulled back on the startup investing as of last year and really focusing more on this thought leadership platform and on Bookbound. So that's where I am today.
Well, and Bookbound, by the time this episode launches, will be a podcast. And our listeners who have aspirations of publishing a book someday should 100% tune in.
Yeah, I know. I'm so excited. It's been really fun. We're just wrapping the first season. And it's just intimate conversations with successful female nonfiction authors about their publishing journeys. You know, like, how did they find their agent? How did they get the, you know, how did they land the deal? If they decided to go a different path, the non-traditional path, maybe a hybrid publisher or self-publishing. So it's been such an incredible learning experience for me. And it's just really been a lot of fun. So I'm excited for it to be out in the world.
As an author myself, I can't wait to listen and see what sort of lessons are there to be just soaked right up. So very, very exciting. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So since you and I have talked, COVID, right? I mean, COVID existed. It still exists. We live in this world that's kind of sort of remote, hybrid. You have to come back to the office. Where are we right now in the scheme of how we are being asked to work?
Yeah, it's still a little bit all over the place. I think there is definitely, I would say, more hybrid than there was even a year ago, where companies really do want to see their employees physically at work, even if it's not 5 days a week, some portion of the week. And that's been a huge adjustment for people, especially I talk with and I work with a lot of moms, and it's been a huge change for them, right? Because they went from being able to work completely remotely and have all that flexibility. They gave up their caregivers. And now it's, oh, okay, wait a second. Like, I have to find a caregiver again. I have to figure out, like, what this is going to look like. So it's been a big adjustment for people. And what's interesting is the other kind of big, I don't even want to say trend, but the big thing that I'm hearing from senior HR leaders at these big companies where I go in and do these talks. This is the consistent thing that I'm hearing, is that for people that are in the earlier parts of their career, say like the first 10 years of their careers, there's more of an expectation from these people that their manager is going to figure out their career for them.
That's interesting.
Which is like really interesting. And it's like something I can't tell you how many companies have said to me, can you, when you come in and you do your talk, can you cover this idea of like owning your career and really having agency over your career and like what that looks like and not relying on other people to figure it out for you? And it literally came up twice last week in prep calls that I had. So I'm not sure if that's COVID related or related to other stuff going on in our culture, but that's a really interesting kind of theme that I've been seeing.
I'm wondering if it's, and I'd love you to sort of explain a little bit more of what that means when you ask your manager to chart your career. I'm wondering if it's related at all to helicopter parenting, right? If this is the generation where their parents charted their course and now they're looking to the next person with seniority or power to essentially step into that role.
Yeah. You know what? I think it's a really great point. And from a technology perspective, right, because of these phones, where even as a parent, I have two kids in middle school. And the fact that I have 24/7 access to their grades is so bad. it's I don't think it's a good thing, right? And I really have to hold myself back from checking all the time because they need to be the ones that are checking. They need to be the ones that are staying on top of their grades. And, you know, there's all these great books that have been written about even when kids then go to college and their parents are still involved, right? Julie Lithcott-Haynes wrote a great book about this. She was the dean of freshmen at Stanford University, and she said she couldn't believe how many parents were reaching out to her because their kids have access, 24/7 access to their parents through these phones, right, where they're constantly texting them. And, right, so you're right. Is this the next stage? Now, like, you're in your career, and you've always had somebody there kind of guiding you and making sure that you don't fall.
So what is your advice to these, I assume they're fairly entry-level younger people, first decade of their career? What are you saying to them about taking agency, and how do you get the confidence to decide that the move that you think you want to make for yourself is really the right move? Then you can, in fact, take that step.
Yeah. Look, I think a lot of it is about proactively creating your own opportunities. And I just think about those moments in my career where, I mean, I'll give you an example. Like back when I was at Movie Phone, this was so long ago, right?
Oh my God, Mr. Movie Phone.
So long ago. But, you know, we launched the website, moviephone.com, and I remember having a conversation with someone on my team where we realized that there was this huge like revenue opportunity that was just like we were just leaving money on the table. And we went to my boss and we said, you know, we want to do something about this. And he said, go do it. Like the two of you just focus on this one thing and see what you can do. And 25% of our revenue the following year ended up coming in through this one channel. And it's like, it's those moments of really being intentional and understanding what's going on in the world and how does that impact your business? And is there a way to capitalize on it? And not just like sitting back and waiting for things to come to you, but like really being proactive, being ambitious, raising your hand. If there's high profile projects going on all around you and you're not on one of those project teams, raising your hand to be on one of those teams. Because you want your work to be visible. You want to be top of mind for people, right?
Yeah.
For promotions. So I think so much of it, Jean, is like just getting out of this autopilot mode and being really intentional and being really proactive. And I think tactically speaking, like what this has looked like for me over the years is I actually have time blocked off on my calendar like once a month. It's an hour. Sometimes I don't even take the full hour where I really like tune into what's energizing me and what's draining me in my work. And how can I figure out a way to lean into the stuff that's energizing? And how can I let go of the stuff that's draining? And when you do that, like when you take that kind of action, it creates space to really help you unlock new opportunities. So it's that it's doing that reflection. It's getting out of that autopilot mode and doing that reflection.
I have never done that exercise, but I am doing it, if not today, then later this week, because I need this. I'm thinking about, I know the things that are draining me, and if I could get rid of them, which I think I probably can, or at least get rid of them to some degree,
yep,
it's a huge possibility.
It is. And put them on your to-don't list. I always have a to-don't list. And what's really so amazing about having things on a to-don't list, I'll give you an example. Like right now, I'm not taking on any new board roles. And I have to tell you, it makes it really easy when someone reaches out to me and asks me to consider a board seat because my response is just, I've decided to not take on any new board roles this year. So like the way that the person receives it then is that it's nothing personal.
Right.
It's a strategic decision that I made, right? So it's like making decisions around the projects, the initiatives that you're just, it's no for now. I could always revisit it in 3 months, 6 months, a year, but these are the things that I'm not going to do right now. And you know, the other things that can go on your to-don't list are behaviors that no longer serve you. Right? Things like, I'll tell you for me, the stuff that I've struggled with, like all throughout my whole career, people pleasing, over preparing. Even like lately, I've been like noticing the last couple of months, I've been complaining more. And it's so draining and complaining about silly little things. And I don't know, I'm like, why am I doing that? It's just so silly. But it's like being aware of it and nipping it in the bud. It's like just really, it's that hyper awareness.
Talk to me about over-preparing, because I think over-preparing is such a female trait, right? I am 100% guilty of this. I spent 4 hours this weekend writing a speech that I've essentially given many, many, many times. Now, you know, I mean, I was taking different pieces. I needed an extra 10 minutes, but could I have probably gotten up there and winged it? Oh, yes.
Yeah. It is definitely a male-female thing. I've seen it my whole entire career. And there was a moment, you'll really appreciate this, when we were at Time and I had just come back from my first maternity leave and I had an idea for a new product. And just to talk about, to socialize the idea with my boss, I spent 40 hours putting a PowerPoint deck together to go in and have a conversation. And I watched a male colleague of mine who I adore and love. Literally, I swear to you, I watched him just knock on her door, go in, sit down and have a 10-minute conversation with her. He had his like 3 sound bites in his head because he had his own thing that he wanted to talk to her about.
Right.
And I'm like, that's the difference right there. It's I wasn't formally pitching. I wasn't asking for money. I wasn't going to the CFO to ask for money. I was just socializing an idea. Why am I putting a PowerPoint deck together, you know? And it's like, I think that's like the perfect example where, you know, there are so many times where you could have spent an hour probably instead of 4.
Yeah.
You know, I could have spent 2 hours instead of 40. I mean, so it's just really having a mindset that's more like good enough. Is it good enough? And I am working on that. I've been working on that for years, but I am like really, really focusing on that. I put over the weekend, I had a proposal that I needed to put together, and they asked for a rough sketch of a proposal. And the old me would have been like, no, it has to be perfect. They said rough sketch. I'm like, you know what? This is going to be a rough sketch. It's going to be bullet points.
Yeah.
It's going to be ranges of opportunities. You know what I'm saying? It's like, let it be more of a conversation.
I'm in the process of working on nipping at a new book. And I had a meeting last week with my agent and with some other people on the team. And I had put together not a full proposal, but some thoughts, right? And I actually just sent it out saying, this is something for you to react to.
Beautiful.
And even if I had done the entire thing, the upshot would have been the same. They would have said, we need a little time to react. So.
Yep. And the other thing I noticed too, because I'm also working on a book proposal, is send like pieces at a time. There's this like perfectionism that I have to fight, this like urge of like, I just want the whole thing done and I want it to look beautiful and for it to be cohesive and just want to send the whole thing in. And I literally am doing the same thing with my agent where it's just section by section. And even if I'm like 80% of the way there on the section, I would rather send it in because she's going to give me feedback.
Yeah.
Right?
Work-life balance is another thing that I think we're still hearing an awful lot about. There was a survey last year, it came from the Muse. Work-life balance, it said, is so critical that more than half of people said there is no amount of pay increase that would persuade them to sacrifice it. So this is a notion that I hear it from my kids. So my kids are a little bit older than yours, specifically not so much from my daughter, who our listeners know because she does our mailbag segment with me, but from my son, who is almost 30 and works a job where he's remote a couple of days a week and in the office a couple of days a week. And he said, if a job said to him, you have to be in every day, he would not do that job. Where do you think that work-life balance fits into the equation, and specifically into the financial equation, the ambition equation, the success equation?
Yeah. Look, I think it's people just, they don't want to sacrifice that balance. I just think about going back to like parts of my career where I remember even just asking to work from home like one day a week. And it was like a hard and fast no because I was a senior executive and the precedent that it would set and right, all of that. And it's interesting. I ended up leaving. That's why I left corporate because I wanted to create a more flexible professional life for myself because I wanted to see my kids. And that was really important to me, right? And I feel a lot of people are in that same boat. They're not willing to give up that time with their family, with their friends, traveling, doing whatever it is that fills them up as a human being, right? They don't want to give that up. So I totally get that. And I do think that companies, because of COVID, are so much more flexible than they used to be. I mean, could you imagine like somebody now saying you can't work from home one day a week?
No, but I hear what you said. I mean, I was so fortunate early in my career when I had my first child. I was not at Time Inc. yet. I was at Smart Money, which was Hearst and Dow Jones. And my boss, who's now the CEO of the Hearst Corporation, basically said, I have decided that I am going to be a good place for working moms. How many days a week do you want to work from home?
Amazing.
And I was able to do that my entire career. Now, the flip side of that was that it was really clear that I was going to be a writer and not be an editor. Because writers could be independent and editors not so much. And that was the track that I followed for years, for decades. So it's not that there weren't choices to be made, but at least I had the choices.
Yeah, I know, which is amazing. I mean, look, I think so much of it comes down to creating value for the organization, you know, and as long as you can show that you will create a ton of value for the company, that actually you'll probably create more value in a hybrid role or in a remote or whatever it is that you're asking, and you demonstrate that, then any manager is going to be like, okay, great, right? I think that the challenge is when the value's not there. If the value's there, great. And then obviously the financial piece of it is commensurate with that, right? But yeah, I always go back to, are you creating value for the company that you work for? What does that look like? And I'm always encouraging people to really think about what are the company's bigger priorities? And are you working on at least one project that is like deeply aligned with those priorities? I think that's really critical. Like when you look at your calendar and you look at your to-do list and you look at where your time is going, because again, it goes back to like being visible. Even if you're not there, you're still visible. Because you're working on a project that the executive team really cares about. So I think that's another piece to just kind of think about.
I started the show talking about the huge number of people that are looking for new opportunities. I want to come back and talk about some advice for them. But before we do that, I also want to tell everybody that the Her Money podcast is now, woohoo, we are on YouTube. So don't forget to subscribe to our channel. It's at Her Money. You'll get notified about all the new episodes. You can let us know what you think about those episodes in the comments. We like comments. So thank you for that. We're going to take a quick break. Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. With the cost of everything on the rise, including healthcare, housing, college educations, and so much more, it's time to check in with your investments and make sure your money is working just as hard as you do. Because the best way to help make sure your money's there for you in retirement and whenever you need it most is to have a strategy for tackling all of life's rising costs. Visit planefe.com/hermoney to schedule your complimentary wealth checkup today. We're back with Fran Hauser, author of Embrace the Work, Love Your Career. So we started, Fran, with this notion that 56% of people said they were looking for new jobs in 2023. We're into the new year. Many people may be refreshing that job search. If you're diving into it with a fervor at this point, what do you say to people who are ready to make a change? How do you know if it's time to leave? How do you know if you should stay at your current company and look for a new opportunity? Where's the best place to start these days?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would recommend that you do is if you're in a place where you're just not happy, like you're not feeling fulfilled, but the environment is not toxic. Like if it's a toxic environment, my advice is always like, you have to get out of there as quickly as possible, right? But if it's not a toxic environment and it's just you're feeling a little bored, you're getting that itch, I encourage people to stay in the job while you're looking for your next thing. And I want to be clear about that because I can't tell you like how many times people have said to me, I'm just going to quit and I'm going to look for the... It's like, look, if the environment is not toxic, just stay while you do your outreach, while you're... Because it's all about relationships, right? It's about reaching out to people, letting them know that you're thinking about your next chapter, asking for their advice, their input, asking them to introduce you to other people who might be helpful. I mean, it's all about people. I always say that it's all about people. It's not about your skills really as much. It's just about like reaching out to people in your world that can be helpful in one way or another.
I often find that people think it's an imposition to network. It's an imposition to ask. We're not as comfortable on the telephone as we used to be. Many of us, emails tend to go into the void. If you did leave a voicemail, nobody checks it. I mean, how do you encourage people to get comfortable with this as somebody who I know gets asked for advice all the time?
I have to tell you that this is the biggest thing that I would say is, especially for younger people, don't wait until you need the person to engage. Don't wait until you need the person to engage with them. And here's the thing. I have a lot of younger people in my life, and they're the ones that are very engaged with me, even on social media. They might share something that I post. They'll comment. They'll reach out every once in a while and say, Fran, I'm like working on your book. I love it so much. I just recommended it to a few other people. Like, those are the people that have this consistency in my life, and they're engaging with me. So when it's time for them to think about their next chapter and they reach out to me, it's a no-brainer for me to help them. It does feel a little bit, I don't even know what the right word is to use, but I don't love it when people like just reach out like out of the blue, you know, and ask for help, just because I feel like it just feels very transactional like to me. So I think my biggest advice to people is don't wait until you need the help. Think about the people that are in your life, they're in your network. Are there very easy ways that you can engage with them and be helpful to them so that when it's time for them to be helpful to you, like they'll do it wholeheartedly and not just because they feel like they have to because you're a family friend or because you're right? So that's like my biggest thing is like, don't wait until you need it. You know, it's that relationship building, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's also, I think, this personal brand building that kind of has to go on throughout the stages of our career. I mean, you're really interesting. As you said, you're a multi-hyphenate. You've done a lot of very different things, but your ethos is present in all of them. For people who are trying to cultivate their own brand, what are the pieces? I mean, it's not as simple as putting up a website where people can find your work or maybe adding to your LinkedIn. It's more than that.
Yeah. And look, I think it really starts with like, what do you want to be known for? Like, what do you want your brand to be? Because it could be a softer thing. Like for me, like I think right now, my brand is really around my nice girl leading with kindness and strength and loving your career and doing that while staying true to yourself. But there have been other times in my career where when I was at Coca-Cola, very early on in my career, my personal brand, you'll really relate to this, Jean, was all about being able to take complex information and simplify it and make it really digestible because I worked in financial reporting. And that's what I became known for. Literally, like I got this promotion and I asked, why did I get this promotion? My boss said, it's because you can do that. You can take really complicated stuff and simplify it. And that was my brand. And that was more of a hard skill, right? But it's like, it starts with kind of, what do you want to be known for? What do you think what is your zone of genius? What are you really, really good at? Like, what's your superpower? And if you don't know, ask people. Like, even ask your friends and colleagues to describe you in a few words. What would they say? How would they describe you? And I just think it's really important in all of the content that you create, whether it's a website, whether it's social media, that ethos is there. It's consistent. You have that through line.
And I do think with social media, and maybe I'm wrong on this, by the way, because I'm not a digital native. I do my best. But I think it's important that your personal life on social is reflective of the way that you want to be seen in the work world. I don't think that people can separate them anymore.
No, you can't. Absolutely. 1,000%. Because you know that HR departments are they're looking at social media before they send your application along. So yes, being very thoughtful about what you're posting, I think that's a huge part of it. And it's a big transition for people when they go like from high school to college, you know?
And from college out, yeah.
And then from college out. So yeah, I think that's a huge part of it.
What are you looking forward to in 2024?
Oh gosh, well, one of the things that I've really loved since I left corporate is the fact that I can just like plant all these seeds and just see which are the ones that take off and then like really kind of like lean into those. But I love the idea that I can try a bunch of different things and see.
It sounds good. We call it throwing spaghetti against a wall, but same notion. You see what sticks, you see what takes off, you see what you enjoy. It's important. Where can we find more of you? Where should we look for the podcast?
Yeah, so franhauser.com and then also bookboundco.com, which is where all the podcast information will be.
We are tuning in. Fran Hauser, thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Jean. Happy New Year.
Before we dive into our mailbag, a quick word from our sponsors. Let's talk retirement, shall we? Did you know that women are more likely to outlive our retirement savings than men are? That's why having consistent income, a paycheck for life, in addition to Social Security, can be a real game changer. That's where annuities come in. If you're not familiar with annuities, the concept is essentially that you take a chunk of money and turn it into a paycheck that you can start drawing on when you want to, next year or next decade. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity available from Gainbridge offers an impressive 5.95% APY long-term, but it also offers flexible withdrawals for unexpected expenses. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity can be an important part of your financial future as you work to build a retirement you love. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit gainbridge.io/parityflex for important information. This is a paid endorsement. Hey, you guys, it's Jean. I want to tell you about another podcast I think you'll love because I love it, Freakonomics Radio. Every week, host and best-selling author Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of business and economics and so much more. He interviews CEOs, historians, even Nobel laureates to explore all kinds of topics like whether AI has a sense of humor and whether two CEOs are better than one. If you are curious like me and just looking to better understand the world around you, you will find it on Freakonomics Radio. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And we are back for our mailbag with my daughter, Julia Chatsky. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning. Bright and early over here.
It is bright and early, but that's a good thing.
It's not even so bright, honestly.
No.
Kind of muggy out.
We're having a little gray stretch, but it's spitting outside, so I can't run outside this morning. I have to run on the treadmill, which bums me out. But Julia's been sending me a whole stream of selfies with Julia with a red face.
They're sweaty selfies.
You are going to, where are you going? You going to Orange Theory or are you going to Soul Cycle? You're exercising more.
I'm going to Orange Theory.
Do you like it?
I don't like it, but I'm doing it.
All right. Do you like the feeling of having done it?
Yes. I like the feeling of having done it. I don't like waking up for it. I don't like the thought of it, but I feel good after, and I feel sore after.
I feel sore today. I went to the gym yesterday, and we did a lot of squats, just like a lot of sets of squats. And so today, I guess the official term is glutes. My glutes are a little bit sore. This is why you are 26 and I am almost 60. This is just the difference. Can you believe I'm almost 60?
You're almost 60. You're so old.
Thank you. Let's take a question before I get mad and hang up.
Our first question today comes from Maggie. She writes, "Hi, Jean and team. I'm a big fan of your podcast, so thank you. I keep hearing about how I should move my savings into a high-yield savings account where I can achieve higher APY of up to 4 to 5%. Can you explain how these high-yield savings accounts work and how banks are able to provide these returns? Are they reinvesting or lending money in those accounts someplace else? Or is the benefit of having your account with them and potentially other products worth providing that back? What determines the percentages offered? Competition with other banks? And finally, is the rate updated annually or at a certain frequency? Thanks. Maggie."
Love this question, Maggie, because it is beyond me why anybody would have money in a plain vanilla savings account these days, when you could earn 12 times that amount by putting your money in a high-yield savings account. And just to sort of put this in perspective, if you put money into a plain vanilla savings account, the average interest rate you're going to earn is 0.3%. But like Maggie said, if you put it into a high yield savings account, you could earn 12 times that, 4 or 5%. So what's the difference? The difference is how these accounts work. High yield savings accounts tend to be at internet banks, at fintechs. Sometimes they're at credit unions, which tend to be a little bit, if not a lot, more aggressive on the interest rates that they're paying to savers. But because they're not your traditional savings account, you may be limited, for example, on the number of withdrawals that you can make per month. You may also have to transfer your money back to a brick and mortar bank, which you can do online very easily, before you can pull it out using an ATM card. There are often no ATM cards associated with these accounts, but they are as safe as traditional bank accounts. They come with the same FDIC protection, which means that if you have up to $250,000 per depositor, that money is guaranteed. There's no way that you're going to lose it. And that, in my mind, makes these a complete no-brainer. Now, you asked how they make money. They make money the same way that banks make money on traditional savings accounts. The banks don't hold on to the money. They lend the money. And so just think about it this way. If a bank is paying you 4.5% and they go ahead and they turn around and they loan that money to somebody who has a car loan at 6 or 7% or a mortgage at 5.5% to 6%, they make a decent amount on that spread. They make 1% to 1.5%. Now, they do that a whole bunch of times. That's how banks make money. And you're right. Banks are doing this and credit unions are doing this for competitive reasons. They want more deposits so they can lend more money, so they can make more loans, and the cycle just continues. As far as the last part of your question, how often does the interest rate get adjusted? It's not on a set schedule. It really follows the interest rate hikes and the interest rate reductions that come down from the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. So when short-term interest rates go up, as they have recently, we start to see these rates go up consistently. Every time the Fed raises rates, these banks will raise rates to stay competitive. What we're expecting later in 2024 is that these rates will start to go down. The Fed is going to start to lower rates. Your rate on your high-yield savings account will start to come down. At that point, when it looks like we're going to start to see interest rates go down, if you know that you're not going to need this money for a year or 2 years, that's the time to actually think about locking it up in a CD so that you can capture this 4.5% to 5% return for longer. But for right now, love my high yield savings account and think it's a really good idea for you.
Mom, is it a pain having to move money back to a regular bank?
It's actually not a pain at all. I do it all the time. I keep money in a high-yield savings account. I've been making contributions to a specific high-yield savings account for the renovations that we're doing on the house at the beach. And every time the contractor asks me for a payment, since I don't have the ability to write checks on my high-yield savings account, I just transfer that money back to my brick-and-mortar bank and I send it out. And generally, they say, you know, it could take you a day or two to get the money. Every time I've made a transfer recently, I've had the money within an hour. So I don't think it's much of a pain at all.
All right. Sounds good.
We have another one?
Our next question comes from Laura. She writes, "Hi, Jean. I love listening to your podcast and I value your advice. I've recently been laid off, job elimination, from a job that I was doing for almost 10 years. Though I was frustrated with the job and looking for something else, the layoff came as a surprise. It's the first time in 25 years that I haven't had a job. I find myself, 40 years old, trying to figure out what I want to do with my life. I want to take a break and find a career that I can love for the next 25 years. So, I'm thinking about switching careers. I want a career that I can use to give back and maybe do some good work in this world. I've been thinking about becoming a financial coach. I've always loved personal finance, and I've been privileged to have a good understanding from an early age. I would love to help people, particularly women, find joy in their finances. Are there any courses or paths you would recommend that I could use to explore this? How does one become a coach? Are there programs or affiliations or licenses that I need? I don't think I want to be a full financial advisor. I don't care to recommend products or invest for others. I want to teach people about money habits, budgeting, and behavioral economics, things they can use in their everyday lives to make their own decisions. This sounds a bit like, how can I get your job? And maybe it is on a smaller scale. Thanks, Laura."
Laura, I certainly don't mind being asked how you can get my job. I've been asked that question many, many, many times, and I just find it flattering because I really like what I am able to do. I can also relate to your story. I got laid off at 40. I got fired from Money Magazine in a round of cost cutting and reductions, and it was a pretty shitty year all around. My father died. I got divorced. I got laid off and I turned 40. And I was really not looking forward to turning 40 because of all of the other stuff that was spinning around in my life. I'm about to turn 60, actually. And I kind of think I was an idiot to be apprehensive about turning 40 because 40 turned out to be pretty okay. But that's besides the point. I love the direction that you're thinking about going. And there is a designation that I prefer. It's the AFC, which is an accredited financial counselor. You get it from the AFCPE. You can go to their website at afcpe.org. That's the Association for Financial Counseling and Planning Education. And it's a process. I mean, it's essentially a 3-year process to get their certification. They require a lot of hours of work and rigorous study and testing. But I got to tell you, when we go out to hire coaches for our Finance Fix program, I look for AFCs. I have worked with them a lot in the past, and I know that they know what they're talking about. So that's where I would send you. And I would just say, because this is a process, that I'd encourage you not to sit on the sidelines while you study and plot your course to the next move. Try to get a job in some sort of an ancillary field where maybe you can pick up people who are likely to be clients or colleagues once you hit the next phase of your life. Good luck with all of that. Please let us know how it goes. And once you get your AFC, if you want to be a financial coach for us, I hope that you'll reach out and you'll send me your resume. And if you've got any other money-related questions, we'd love to hear from you. You can send them our way by emailing mailbag@hermoney.com or leave us a comment on our YouTube page at Her Money on YouTube. Jules, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And now we're going to take a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
We are back with your money tip of the week. From Netflix to Stitch Fix, subscriptions are probably costing you more than you realize. According to a recent study, the average American spends $219 per month on subscription services, and that's more than 2.5 times what they thought they were paying. If you suspect that I perhaps might be talking about you, the way to nip this problem in the bud is to set aside a chunk of time, 15, 20 minutes, and go back through your credit card and your bank statements. Because subscriptions happen on the regular, you should be able to, by looking at 2 months' worth of statements, pick up pretty much all of them. When you get to anything that's a subscription, ask yourself, is this something I'm actually using, or is this something I just don't need as often? Give you an example. My husband and I subscribe to, this is going to sound a little bit crazy, but we live in an apartment building. We subscribe to a subscription to Fresh Patch. Fresh Patch is actually a patch of real grass. It's sod. It comes every few weeks or every month. And when you don't feel like taking the dog out late at night or early in the morning, he can actually do his business on this patch, but you can't keep it forever. So we were getting Fresh Patch every 3 weeks. I did a subscription audit just this past weekend and decided I actually don't need it that often. And I pushed it back so that now I'm only getting it every 4 to 5 weeks. You get how this works? Saving a little money over the course of an entire year. If you need more help figuring out where your money's going every month and how much you need to save to meet your 2024 goals, join us for the next session of Finance Fix. We've got 2 upcoming sessions we are really excited about. One is a pre-retirement checkup, the other focused on young adults. Sign up at financefix.com. Thanks so much for joining me today on Her Money, and thanks to Fran Hauser for sharing how we can land a career that we love in 2024. If you like what you hear, I hope you'll subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review. We love hearing what you think, and by the way, so do the rest of our listeners. Have you heard? Our show is now on YouTube. If you subscribe, like, and hit the notification bell, you can stay updated on our latest episodes. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Edelman Financial Engines. Her Money is produced by Haley Pascalidis. The show is mixed and mastered by CDM Sound Studios. Our music is provided by Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Check out our new podcast, How She Does It, hosted by Karen Feinerman, for intimate cocktail party style conversations with today's most talented and powerful female leaders. This podcast is also part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. You can find us and other shows like us at airwavemedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.